Okay, so we're going to talk about angels. We're going to start with our memory verse. Ready? Are they not all ministering spirits sent out to serve for the sake of those who are to inherit salvation? Yeah, do whatever version you're comfortable with, okay? I use the ESV. ESV is kind of a newer, well, that's relative, a newer English version, and I've been using it for my Into the Word right now. And so it just happened to be the thing I clipped for this particular one. But we're also using this one here right now for what we're talking about. Together, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. So didn't know it. Some of them found it out later, but not all of them. So these are all the angel stories that we were looking at in Genesis. The ones in green we've already hit. Leaves us only a couple more. So, Christine, you're right. Genesis 32 is where we're ready for. So, Genesis 32, so make your way there. The story is a continuation of Jacob's story. Remember that he saw the angels of God going up and down on this staircase between the heaven and he saw God up at the top. And he saw that in a dream a couple of nights after he started his trip north, there at a place that he gave the name Bethel, the house of God. And he set up a little pillar and said, if God will take care of me like he said he was going to take care of me, I'll come back here and this will be a place of worship, which eventually it does become a place of worship. The story of Jacob, though, is that he stays up there 20 years. Remember, he got himself in trouble because he allowed his mom to talk him into tricking dad in order to take something from Esau that Esau had actually sold to him for a bowl of beans. It's a really complex family dynamic thing going on there. But he gets sent off with zip. He has nothing but the clothes on his back and the stick in his hand and the sandals on his feet. And so when he gets to where he was going, way up north, he has to take a job from his uncle. And he works 7 years in order to get married to his cousin that he's in love with. But lo and behold, on the night of the wedding, his uncle swaps cousins, gives the other daughter to him instead. And Jacob is mad, but he's nothing he can do about it. I mean, he could have simply said, fine, I'm taking my wife and leaving. And then he would have been married to the sister that he knew but wasn't in love with, but he wouldn't have anything else, because he still had zip, because he spent 7 years working for the dowry. So his uncle says, tell you what, work 7 more years for me, I'll let you have the other sister, the sister you're in love with, right now. But you have to work another 7 years for me. And so that's how we ended up with the two sisters married to the one man who was their cousin. And immediately what starts happening with them? Anybody know? They start fighting. It's a big baby contest. It's a huge baby contest. It goes on and on until we've got 11 boys and at least one girl. There's probably other girls. And we've also sucked in two secondary wives from both sides because they start invoking this whole surrogate mother situation, just like Grandma Sarah had. And it's just a mess. At the end of the total 14 years, Jacob has two wives, two concubines that go along with those wives, and at least 12 kids, probably more. But he still doesn't have any money to spare. So he agrees to stay one more period. Turns out to be 7 years or so, That'd be 6 years more for a total of 20. And this time, everything he works for belongs to him. And you remember in the last story we told from Genesis 31, the angel of God gave him a dream that this type of animal is going to be the one that breeds really well, or this type of animal is the one that's going to breed really well. And so this is how he ends up becoming very, very wealthy. He ends up with most of his uncle's stuff. And then he decides to run away. He's like, I'm done with my contract. I'm out of here. All right, so that's where we're at in the story. He travels about 11 days' journey south. And his uncle chases him down and accuses him of trying to steal everything, which of course is not true. But they come to an agreement that Jacob gets to keep everything because it is his, and they make a little marker to basically say, God's going to watch over the both of us because we don't trust each other. Now, that little crisis is taken care of. But Jacob is really concerned about the next crisis, which is he's now going to be back with his twin brother that he hasn't seen for 20 years. That he, the last time he knew about his brother was wanting to kill him because he'd cheated him. So that's where we're at. We're in Genesis, let me get there too. Genesis chapter number, oops, I clicked and I didn't want to click, sorry. Yeah, Genesis chapter 32, okay? Is everybody there yet? I'm not there yet because my computer is acting up. There we go. All right, so Genesis chapter 32 is right after his uncle is gone. And what does it say? Jacob went on his way, and who met him? The angels of God. That's right. So, how often has he been seeing angels? Not very, right? 20 years ago, he saw a vision of angels when he was on his way north. He had a dream during the last, well, the beginning of the 6 years that an angel was telling him which type of animals that he should contract to breed and be his animals. And then now, suddenly, here he is, he sees another vision of angels. So this is another reminder of us, to us. Angels are active all the time, but how often do they get seen? Not very. Very seldom. It's exceptionally rare. And it's usually got some sort of connection to the bigger story of Scripture, like this guy right here, Jacob. Because Jacob's all nervous and worried about his brother and getting back into the family relationships down here in the south. So God lets him see some angels. Now, does he actually talk to the angels? No, there's no conversation that goes on between them. He only just sees them. It says, when Jacob saw them, he said, this is God's camp. So he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Mahanaim is Hebrew for camps. It's actually a dual. Two camps. Two camps. And so it's very much like he did with the last naming. He saw angels going back and forth to God, so he names the place God's House, Gate of God. Here, he's camped out, and he looks out in the distance. He sees a camp of angels, and he goes, oh, two camps. My camp, their camp. We don't know. Why were the angels going up and down on the stairs? They were doing their job with the stairs, so probably something similar here. Is that they are supposed to be there to be keeping track of stuff. Because remember, we just got out of a very tense situation, didn't we? Jacob was concerned that his father-in-law would take everything from him once he caught up with him. But we know that his father-in-law, which is also his uncle, said, before I caught up with you, God gave me a dream and warned me that I should say nothing good or bad to you. But everything you have belongs to me. Right? So it's possible, I'm just going to suggest it here, it's possible these angels were on standby to make sure none of that garbage went on. In case Laban didn't take the very strong hint from God, keep your mouth shut, leave him alone. So that might be why they're parked here. Because we also know, because, you know, the name of this class is, let's talk about angels, good and bad. So we've got troublemakers out there in the unseen world that are also doing their thing. And so it could be that God's angels were encamped there to make sure that there was no messing around from the other side either. Yes, ma'am. Yes, that is more than likely the reason he's allowed to see them. The fact that they were there, that's just the reality. God is making sure things are happening behind the scenes all the time with his angels. But the fact that he was given this glimpse of them may have been for his own confidence. Yeah, I think you're correct. All right, so the next part of the chapter is basically him getting back with his brother. It's quite intriguing, the whole thing that happens here. He starts divvying up a whole big present to his brother and sends it out in pieces to say, hey, this all belongs to you. Basically, he's trying to let his brother know, I'm sorry I took your blessing and your birthright. But here's a whole bunch of goodies that I've gotten to kind of help you make up for that. Now, meanwhile, though, while all of that is taking place, he has another encounter here in chapter 32. Verse 22, the same night he arose, he took his two wives, his two female servants, his 11 children, that's the boys, there's at least one girl, and he crossed the ford and had them cross the ford of the Jabbok. So we know exactly where this stream is at. It's about two-thirds of the way down from the Sea of Galilee along the Jordan River. So he took them and sent them across the stream and everything else that he had, and then he's left alone on the north side of this stream. And what happens? We're told that a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. Now, that's all it says here, is man. It's not the word angel, is it? So why am I bringing it up as an angel story? Because the word angel gets used in another passage about this event. So I want you to go there before we go any farther in this one. Hosea chapter 12. If you need to, use your table of contents to find Hosea. That's perfectly fine. That's what it's there for. Hosea chapter 12, and we're going to start at verse number 2, actually. This is many, many centuries later that this prophet is written. And he is given instruction by the Holy Spirit to talk about the history of Jacob. So look at verse 2. The Lord has an indictment against Judah and will punish Jacob according to his ways. He will repay him according to his deeds. Now that's got a reference to Hosea's time, that the Israeli people are misbehaving once again. And God says, okay, I'm going to bring a lawsuit against you guys, a figurative lawsuit, and we're going to have some judgment time. We're going to have some discipline time. Right, Jacob in this case is the entire nation that came from him. Because in the story we're about to read again in Genesis, it's where his name gets changed to Israel and becomes the name of the nation. Okay? But look at verse 3. In the womb, he took his brother by the heel. Right? You remember that whole story. They're twins, Esau and Jacob. Esau comes out first, and he's hairy like a rug. That's why he gets the name Esau. It means a fine piece of work, like a rug, right? Because he must have had like one of those conditions where you got lots and lots of body hair. But he comes out like a little red hairy rug. But grabbing a hold of his ankle is his twin brother coming out. Now, they don't look like each other. They're not that sort of twin. But he's holding him on him his heel as he comes out. And either before that happened or because this happened, the name heel grabber had the idea of somebody that kind of tries to pull one over on you. We actually have a remnant of this in our own language. When I tell you that I'm pulling your leg, what do you know? I'm not being serious, right? I'm trying to tease you, to joke with you, right? Well, that's kind of a remnant of that same idea. So Jacob's name meant literally the little boy that grabbed the heel, but he grows up to be the man who tries to pull fast ones on you. Okay? So in the womb, he took his brother by the heel. In his manhood, he strove with God. He strove with who? The angel, right? That's why this is an angel story over in Genesis 32. And prevailed. He wept and sought his favor. Then we have a little backtrack. He met God at Bethel, and there God spoke with us. So that's a little retrograde thing that Bethel got its name because of Jacob being there and seeing the ladder or the staircase. So we know then that the man back in our Genesis story is identified in Hosea as an angel. So let's go back and read in Genesis 32 again with that in mind. We were in verse 24. Jacob was left alone. A man, specifically an angel, wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. Now, why? Why is a wrestling match going on? Anybody got any thoughts on that? Yeah, why is he wrestling with his angel?
They disagree about something.
They disagree about something. Mm-hmm. He's wrestling for a blessing. That becomes a little bit more clear the farther along you go. It says, when the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, let me go, the day is broken. And Jacob said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. Well, is he bossy or is he desperate? Well, remember, he's under a lot of stress right now, isn't he? He just fixed one stress thing because of his uncle, father-in-law. I mean, that was pretty stressful. And that's following on 20 years of stress. And now he's worried about his brother wanting to kill him still, perhaps. What am I supposed to do about that? He's worried about all his kids and his wives. You know, what am I supposed to do? If my brother wants to kill me, he might want to kill them. Oh, no, right? I mean, he's going to do something really goofy here. He's going to divide his family up into two groups. He's going to send the concubines and their kids up in front. Because, you know, if they get killed, they don't matter as much. Yeah, that's the culture of the time. Yeah, that's not a good situation, is it? So he's keeping his full wives including the wife that he really loves a lot. She's going to be at the tail end of this next group. He's going to keep them back behind with their kids. He actually says, if Esau attacks the first one, then the other one might have a chance to get away. He actually says, I'm going to divide them up into two camps. He uses the name that he'd just given to the other place, right? Two camps. He says, I'm going to divide my group into two camps. So he's got issues going on right now. And he stays behind probably to pray. Because we see this in the New Testament. We see it in other places besides that. But Jesus often went and prayed by himself in a remote location, right? The night before he went to the cross. What was he doing? Praying. Where? Garden of Gethsemane. Did he have his disciples around him? Well, he dumped off the most of them at the gate of the garden. He took three with him and said, you guys, I want you to pray with me a lot tonight because, man, I'm feeling the weight of death itself on me. But he didn't stay close to him, did he? Says he went about a stone's throw away. So he wanted to be alone to talk to God. So I think it's possible that that's what Jacob was up to here, is that he was wanting some alone time with God to talk about what was stressing him out and what needed to happen. And one of the big topics would be, God, you got to bless me here. You got to make sure that Esau doesn't take away all this stuff. I'm giving him a whole bunch of stuff to make up for what I did to him. But please, Lord, don't let him hurt my kids. Don't let him hurt my wives. Don't let him hurt me. Let me get back with my dad and my mom. And see, can you kind of feel that might be on his mind? And then in the midst of that, an angel pops in. And he would assume that an angel is there to represent whom? God.
He's already worried about what's going to happen to him when he meets Esau.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was a little bit skittish about going over there in the first place, and the angel came to push him along to get him over there, and then Jacob said,
yeah, and see, but that's how it ends at daybreak. The wrestling match started well before that. Now, the Jewish tradition, which is represented by Josephus, writing in the first century of the Christian era, is that the angel started the wrestling match. I doubt that, but that's their Jewish tradition. I think Jacob and the angel probably started out talking, and Jacob was not satisfied with what he was hearing. Yeah, why would he? So it starts out, I think, as a prayer session, which then turns into kind of a physical. Okay, how many of you, when you were begging your moms and dads for things, sometimes took hold of them a little bit? Have you ever seen the little kids holding on to their parents' leg, begging for something? You were not allowed to touch your parents. So that you don't relate to this. But I was looking around and I could see a few other people. Yeah, they know exactly. You not so much, but I think that this is what it did. It was starting as kind of a prayer time. The angel shows up. It turns into a conversation with the messenger of God. And pretty soon, one thing leads to another. And Jacob is like, no, come on. You've got to take care of this.
Why would the angel even bother to wrestle when all the angel has to do is say,
which is funny because that's how it ends, isn't it?
Yeah, but why begin it in the first place?
No, he doesn't. You were going to ask something or make a comment? Yes, and that's where it's going to shift on us in a moment. Okay, you're going down the same path a lot of people have gone. Okay? Is who is this angel? Now, one of the things that we've already talked about is angels are their messengers. And in the ancient Middle East, the ancient world, messengers spoke in the first person on behalf of whoever it was they were speaking for. And so we can't totally go just by that. It is a cultural difference between us and that period. And so we can't be sure, would this perhaps be Jesus ahead of time? Some people have suggested that. Some people have actually insisted on that. I have to say, I'm not altogether sure that that could be proven. Because angels do represent God in this very personal fashion and form. Now, the fact that he's appearing as a man, we know some angels look exactly like people. They may be that watcher class that's mentioned in the book of Daniel, where they can move around unawares. Remember our Bible passage that we had a little while ago. But the thing is that this ends after an indeterminate period of time. Could have been a few hours that this is going on. But the sun is coming up. Esau is coming closer. You know, he's as the sun comes up, he's going to be breaking camp wherever he's at, and he's going to be coming to meet Jacob on this day. So this can't go on indefinitely. It has to be finished. So the angel says, the sun's coming up. You got to let me go. No, I'm not going to let you go. Okay, fine. You're making me do this. What does he do? He touches him on the hip, exactly what you're talking about. This angel could have taken him out at any moment. Just barely touches him, and his hip gets knocked out of joint. Now, what's that? Yeah, I don't know if he's... The stronger person has to put an end to the silliness that's going on here. And that's what the angel does. The angel puts an end to the struggle. Funny part of the story that's in there, if you read it, is that from then on, all Jewish people refuse to eat the little bits of meat that are next to that joint on an animal. Just one of the traditions, right? Because, you know, that's a special piece. Yeah, it's a memory thing. Hey, let me tell you why we don't eat that. It's a story about our ancestor. But continuing here. Yep. You feel for him in this pain, right? His is not a fracture like yours was, but I'm sure it was still pretty painful. In fact, it talks about him limping here in a moment. But Jacob is insistent. I am not going to let you go until you make this blessing promise to me. And so this is what the angel says. What is your name? Yaakov. Jacob. Heel grabber. Leg puller. And he said, your name's no longer going to be leg puller, heel grabber, but Yisrael. For you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed. Now, prevailed does not necessarily mean won in this context. It could be as simple as you got through it and you got what you wanted. You got your blessing. Honestly, God was blessing him anyway. But you got the blessing of a new name. Yisrael struggled or wrestled with El. Now, El is the shortened form of Elohim, which is the common name for God in the Hebrew text, which is why he gives the name of the place right here. He blessed him, and he named the place Peniel, the face of God, for I've seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered. Now, the thing is, as I was just saying, angels represent God in such an intimate form that wrestling God's angel is the same as wrestling God. But we also know that the name Elohim is not exclusively used for God. It's actually used for people too, judges. Judges were referred to as Elohim. And angels were sometimes referred to as Elohim. Because the literal meaning of Elohim is mighty one. Is a judge a mighty one? Yeah, they make life and death decisions, right? Are angels mighty ones? Yeah, they are very powerful. So that really doesn't help us clear it up as to whether or not it was Jesus or God the Father or the Holy Spirit in human form coming and doing all this. The Hosea passage says angel, messenger of God. So this passage, that passage together really doesn't clear that up for us. But it does let us know that God was communicating a new name to this guy. And that's one of the purposes of these angels, is to help people who are going to inherit salvation, right? That's the passage that we start every session with from Hebrews chapter 1. They're sent to see to the needs of those who will inherit salvation. So this angel was there to help him out and got the job done. Now, how long did it take? A lot longer than most of the angelic interventions we've seen so far, right? This is probably the longest angelic interaction we've seen so far, because it took a few hours. But what happens to the angel after this? He just disappears. He doesn't keep traveling with him. He goes back into that unseen world. Now, I skipped over a part that I know some of you are going to look at. Jacob asked him, please tell me your name. But he said, why is it that you've asked my name? We don't know. Some people think that knowing a person's name gives you some sort of relationship with them. Some people would say you got power over them if you have their name. That's a little bit mystical for this passage, because honestly, just knowing the name of an angel is not going to give you power over them. Not going to happen. That would be Zechariah, that Gabriel made a big deal out of his name. And in the context was, my name is Gabriel, which means the mighty warrior of God, and I was sent to you to tell you these things that you have not believed. And so you're not going to be able to speak, or apparently hear, until they all take place. So that was the Zechariah context. And it was a demonstration that angels do have power, and that apparently they have options for dealing with troublemakers, people that are not paying attention to the message. Well, this is probably another example of that, right? The angel would have been dispatched by God to be seen by Jacob. We have to acknowledge that, right? So the angel was there for a purpose. Jacob wants to wrestle with him. Wrestle more than the guy wants to wrestle. Says, stop. It's almost daylight. You got to knock it off. No, I'm not going to let you go until you bless me. Fine. Now, okay, and he gives him a new name. Would he have gotten the new name anyway? We don't know. Probably, because he had already been wrestling with him metaphorically before that, probably, and then right up to the morning light. But the new name is important. And it takes a while for Jacob to actually claim the name. He goes on calling himself Jacob and Israel for quite some time. You know, and that's actually kind of, it makes sense to us, doesn't it? That sometimes when God changes things for us, we have a little bit of a hard time relating to that and accepting it and acting on it. And so Jacob needed maybe some time to get used to that. Questions or comments? More on that. Let's fast forward to way many more years later in Jacob's life, in Genesis 48. This is the last time that the word angel gets used in the book of Genesis. And it's not about an appearance of an angel. An angel doesn't show up in this story. It's actually Jacob is, he's trying to prepare his adult children, who have their own children and grandchildren, for what's going to happen next in their lives. Let me get to the exact place I want us to be here in just a moment. We've got two grandkids of Jacob in chapter 48 that Jacob is going to adopt as his own to kind of, it's funny, that's why I'm laughing. You remember how Jacob loved Rachel so much and wanted her to be his beloved wife? And everything got screwed up when that didn't happen. Well, the son that was born to them, named Joseph, that's the one that Jacob really wanted to count as his heir. But there were a whole bunch of other boys in front of him. So Jacob found a workaround. Jacob disinherits Joseph and adopts his two sons as full sons of his. Now, what does that mean? It means that Joseph's line is going to get two parts of the inheritance, which is the way you always referred to the inheritance that the eldest son got. It was always referred to as the double portion. Yes. So the way it was supposed to work at this time, and it, again, it gets back to the whole complication of the family. This family's got a lot of dysfunction in it. He's got 12 sons, and son number one, Reuben, has been disinherited. He'll still get an inheritance, but he's not the firstborn anymore. The next two sons, they got same problem. They got in trouble with dad. So it's son number four that's going to be the heir. So all of Jacob's property is going to be divided up into 13 portions. Two of those portions will go to Judah because he's the heir. That's the double portion. That's the way their inheritance traditions worked. So what does he do? He says, all right, Joseph, I want you to be able to get a double portion, but I can't do that unless I disinherit you and adopt your two sons as my sons, and then each one of them gets a portion. It was a workaround. But it's in the context of him doing all of that that he makes this reference to an angel. It's in verse number 15. He blessed Joseph and said, "The God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked, the God who has been my shepherd all my life long to this day, the angel who has redeemed me from all evil, bless the boys." See that? "And in them let my name be carried on, in the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, let them grow up, grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth." So that's the last time that the word angel gets used in the book of Genesis. And it is used in such a way that it seems to be tightly connected to God. Did you see that? And that's really what's going to happen in the next part of our look at this stuff, is that sometimes, as we've already been kind of wrestling with, if you'll accept that terminology, is that the word, can't believe it. Thank you, my dear. He'll take care of that. The word angel does sometimes seem to be connected to God himself directly intervening in things. Because what does the word angel literally mean? Messenger or delegate. Somebody that's carrying a message or carrying out some sort of directive. And so what we're going to discover when we go to the book of Exodus next, which is going to happen many hundreds of years later, is that angels, plural, will be involving themselves in the work of God with the Israeli people as a nation now. But there's going to be an angel singular that is going to be particularly involved with the Jewish people. Thank you, dear. So I want you to go to Numbers 20, verse 16 first. Now this is a flashback is not quite the proper term for this. It's a referencing back by Moses. He's sending a message to the Edomites, who are descendants of Esau. You know, so we've still got that whole Jacob-Esau interaction going on here. So he's sending a message to them to allow the Jewish people, the Israelis, to pass through Edomite territory on their way to the Promised Land. And this is what the message says. "Thus says your brother Israel." See, that's, remember, they're brother nations. Israelites from Jacob, Edomites from Esau. "You know all the hardship that we have met. How our fathers went down to Egypt. We lived in Egypt a long time, 430 years, if you want the time that's involved in that. And the Egyptians dealt harshly with us and our fathers. And when we cried out to the Lord, he heard our voice and sent" what? "An angel and brought us out of Egypt." So now we've got the mention of an angel singular, a messenger of God that's going to be coming to Egypt to get them out. Now go to Exodus 3. This is the story of Moses. It's late in the story, really. Remember that Moses was born as the son of slaves in Egypt, and he came close to being sacrificed in the Nile, but he was protected and ends up being adopted by Pharaoh's daughter, and then he becomes a prince in Egypt, and he spends 40 years being raised as both Israeli and Egyptian, but he's living as an Egyptian. And then he sees how his ethnic relatives are being mistreated, and he tries to do something to help them out, ends up killing a guy, tries to cover it up because he thinks that nobody saw it, but the next day he gets after a couple of Israelis that are hassling each other, and he says, "Hey, why are you treating your brother that way?" And the guy that was causing the trouble goes, "What are you going to do about it? You're going to kill me like that Egyptian you killed yesterday?" And that's when Moses goes, "Uh-oh." And he runs away because he knows that his killing of an Egyptian was known. And arrest warrants actually do go out for him, but he's already long gone. So he spends the next 40 years in exile in Midian. Gets married. Has a job as a shepherd. Well, this happens right at the end of that 40-year exile. He is tending his father-in-law's sheep on the backside of the wilderness at a place called Horeb, which is the other name for Sinai. And this is what happens, verse 2. "The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. He looked, and behold, the bush was burning, yet it was not consumed." Now, that's a pretty freaky thing to see, right? Any of you ever seen a bush burning that didn't burn up? You got a burning bush in your front yard, and it turns very special colors in the fall, right? Yeah, that's not that type of bush. The text says that Moses said, "I'm going to turn aside to see this great sight. Why is that bush not burned?" Right? He did the same thing all of us would do. It's like, that is like really weird. I got to get a little closer look at that. And so he starts to go over there. And that's when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see. And God called out to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." Now, when you are a shepherd, you're used to being out there away from other human beings. You might talk to yourself, but you don't have other people talking to you. You talk to the sheep, but they don't talk back. How shocked would you be if suddenly a voice came out of a burning bush that was not burning up? Right? And so that's his introduction to the supernatural. He's 80 years old. He's never been involved with supernatural before, other than his birth. But he doesn't remember that. He only got told stories about it. God's never talked to him before. This is all brand new. And so he said, "Here I am." And then he was told, "Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." So, one of the things you see repeated in contacts with God is that you're not supposed to have man-made material between you and God-made things. So, if you're on holy ground, you take off your shoes so that your feet are on God's soil. Gentlemen don't wear hats on their heads when they pray, because their heads need to be clear of man-made material, right? Only the air of God touching it. That's the New Testament connection to this sort of thing. The priests in the Old Testament always ministered barefoot. They didn't wear shoes while they did their ministry. I have threatened a few times to do my preaching and stuff barefoot, but I would not do that to you guys, okay? I do know some musicians, though, that always do their stuff barefoot for the very reason we're talking about right here. But this is another instance where the angel and God thing kind of get hard to sort out. Because look at what happens next. He said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. So we were told that it's the angel that's in the bush, right? But who does Moses thinks in the bush? God. And so it becomes a little bit like, okay, how are we supposed to understand and interpret this? Because angels work for God, right? They're created beings. We already talked about that in the class. But God is uncreated, and God is the one that directs things to happen. So what's going on here? I think we'll be able to kind of work a little bit on that next week, because we're about out of time. But this is the place where I think we start understanding that the name angel, or the word angel, can be used in its idea of a messenger, but even inside what we traditionally call the triunity of God, the Trinity of God. Did you know that Jesus is referred to as an angel? Yeah, he is in one passage. Does that mean he was a created messenger of God? No, that's not the point. The point was the Father sent him here to do a job, right? That made him an angel. I think something similar happens with the Holy Spirit, but we'll get to that next week. One last thing, though, that's related to the Exodus. Let's just test where your thinking is, because I know where my thinking's been like this in my growing up years. In the plague of the firstborn, when the firstborn are killed, how are they killed? By an angel? Is that right? Is that what you say? The angel of death? Okay. Would you be surprised to know that it doesn't say that in the Exodus text? The word angel does not get used in any of the plague context in the book of Exodus. It's from the Psalms that we get that impression. That's where we'll go to. Psalm 78. Psalm 78, written many, 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 many centuries later. Verse 42 is where the word angel actually appears. But we're going to go a little bit before that. This part of the psalm is kind of remembering how much trouble the Israelis caused for themselves because of their rebellion against God. Okay? So look at verse 40. How often they rebelled against him in the wilderness. They grieved him in the desert. I want you to memorize that word grieve there, because it's going to come up next week for us, okay? And the wilderness experience. They tested God again and again and provoked the Holy One of Israel. They didn't remember his power or the day when he'd redeemed them from the foe, when he performed his signs in Egypt and his marvels in the fields of Zoan. He turned their rivers to blood so they couldn't drink of their streams. He sent among them swarms of flies, which devoured them, and frogs, which destroyed them. Does that sound familiar? That's the plagues, right? He gave their crops to the destroying locust, the fruit of their labor to the locust. He destroyed their vines with hail and their sycamores with frost. He gave over their cattle to the hail, their flocks to thunderbolts. He let loose on them his burning anger, wrath, indignation, and distress. A company of what? Destroying angels. That's the reason we think about the angels in the Exodus story. The word doesn't appear in the book of Exodus, but it does appear here in reference back to that. And it wasn't just the firstborn. They were involved in all the other stuff too. He struck down every firstborn in Egypt, the firstfruits of their strength, in the tents of Ham. And then he led out his people like sheep and guided them in the wilderness like a flock. And so that kind of sets us up for next week. We know then that from what we've already read, the people in Egypt, the Israelis in Egypt, were going, "Oh God, we're so messed up here. It's horrible. It's horrible. They're mistreating us. You got to help us." And God sends his angel, right? Singular, to take care of that. And sends Moses by means of the angel to be the human instrument in taking care of it. But when the plagues start happening, it's a whole bunch of angels that are involved, plural. But they're doing it behind the scenes. And then, after all that's done, the angel of the Lord leads the Israelis out of Egypt. And that's who we're going to meet next week. So if you want to read a little bit ahead in Exodus 14, that's fine. Okay? Questions or comments? Yes, ma'am. Yep. And that is correct. We know that all of the animals that the Egyptians had, the firstborn died. Only the animals that were protected by their association with the Israelis living inside one of those blood-marked houses, those were the only firstborn animals that survived. Now, when you think of a firstborn in this story, don't you always usually think about a little bitty baby? Don't. I'm a firstborn and I'm 65.
Okay? The firstborn men, right? Boys. I
don't count. Yes, that is correct. It was only the firstborn males that were hit by that plague. So yes, you would have been spared. But your brother wouldn't. It's interesting, though, that you wanted to get out of it. But the whole thing that we're going to shift to now is seeing that God's angels are constantly at work doing his stuff, whether we see them or not. And it's not always good that they're doing, because the judgment of God is sometimes mandated by the actions of people. All right. Last chance. Question or comment? Yes, ma'am. Okay, the Hebrew one are they not ministering angels sent to see to the needs of those who will inherit salvation? Does that mean that people who are not going to be saved don't have angels? I don't think that you could necessarily conclude that. It's always the free will of people that determines their ultimate fate. It's not the workers around them that will determine whether they're won or lost. It's their choice. But the angels are dispatched by God to, shall we say, optimize the situation. That's probably the best way to think of it. So they are the optimizing agents behind the scenes. Angels do not do gospel work. That's people. See, angels are not out there preaching the gospel to individuals on this planet. We're the ones that are supposed to share that story. Why? Because it impacted us. Angels can't be saved, so they can't speak with any type of personal experience about salvation. I mean, they can share the story, I suppose, in its technicalities, but they can't say things like, "I know what it felt like to be lost, and now I know what it feels like to be saved by Jesus Christ." Angels can't say that. It's not part of their experience. So I guess that's the long answer to your question, is that angels still work with all people to at least give them the best possible choice to make a free will. Yeah, are you talking about guardian angel sort of thing? Yeah. Remember, though, that all people are born innocent. It's not until they make those first choices to sin that their problem arises. And so, yeah, I would expect that angels are still supposed to be taking care in those younger years. So, you know, we talked about that when we were talking about guardian angels. Are they, you know, one angel assigned to every person? We don't know how many angels there are. We were guessing that based on some of the wording that we had, they could be anywhere from several hundreds of millions to billions of angels. Yeah, but the illustration I used multiple times, though, is when you go into a restaurant that's busy, is your waiter exclusively your waiter? No, but they are your waiter, right? They're seeing to your needs. And so it's very likely, that's my opinion here, it's very likely that most guardian angels have multiple responsibilities. Just hope your table is not like a long way from another table so that your angel has to flip back and forth and get distracted too much. I always hate that when that happens in a restaurant. I'm like, would you assign the waiters and waitresses one area? Don't scatter it all over the place. Yes, your stagehands behind the scenes, yep.
Behind the scenes. So I suppose that angels, how I would probably imagine it, is that angels are there to protect the people and guide the people and they're working behind the scenes for everyone, including the non-believer, because God says that, you know, he'll never give us too much that we can't handle.
That's correct. Yeah, it's hard for us to imagine all the fine details going behind the scenes. But yeah, God is going to make sure nothing is too hard for anyone to handle because he wants that optimal ability of people to make a free will choice to embrace him. And so yeah, angels are somehow involved in all those details. Let's go ahead and pray. Close down for the night. Father, I thank you for your angels and their work. And we thank you for your scripture that helps kind of draw back the curtain a little bit on some of these things. We ask that you would help us to remember at all times that the angels are not the ones that have to bear testimony to our fellow humans about salvation. That's us. They're there just to make sure things are fair, I think. So, Father, let us shine and set a good example for all the people we have contact with. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.